Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
We are back, and the subject today, I'll just repeat myself at this point, is non-married, non-cohabiting parents who have children. And so sometimes we take for granted that children come into this world coming from very different family situations. Obviously, there's the obvious where people are married, they have children. Then there's those that adopt. Then there's those that have stepchildren. You know, a couple comes together, one of them had a child from an earlier relationship. We've talked about those at various times in the last few years, but what we've never really talked about, and today's going to be the first time we do, is children who are born to parents who are not married and never live together. And what happens when those parents are unable to agree on a parenting schedule for the children? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And so if you think about it, there are many reasons why children might be born to two parents who never lived together and were never married together. In some cases, people immigrate, and one parent may have gotten pregnant on a visit by the other parent, and they never lived together. And then by the time the child is born, those two parents are no longer together. And now this child is born to two parents that have never lived together and never will live together. In other cases, it could be because of military reasons. Some children are born to a soldier while the other, while the maybe the mother is not in the armed forces and the father was. And then by the time the child is born, the parents are no longer together. And in some cases, and you know, we use the word one night stand or a very brief relationship. In some cases, people may have been dating. It may not be a one-night stand. They could have been dating. It could have been a deliberate pregnancy or an accidental pregnancy. And when we say accidental, it could be accidental for one side, not both. You never know. It could be the failure of prophylactics or birth control. It could be because somebody deceived the other one as to whether they were actually using birth control or maybe was using an old condom that may not have properly worked. Whatever the reasons are, a child is born and the parents are not living together. And now they want to figure out the child's life. And that is our conversation for today, is what do we do with those parents who have a child that's never been a child who have parents that have never been together, and now they need our help. And may I ask, have you come across this, Leanne?
I definitely have. I've had a number of client situations where the parents have never lived together and have a child together, and I have found, it could just be by fluke, but I found that those were some of the more complicated files for getting agreement on parenting schedules, because, you know, the parties, the ones I've had, it was often where the relationship was a casual one, whether it was a one night stand or just something casual, and a pregnancy resulted. So the parties, you know, they didn't have that level of commitment to one another, that you might have in a situation where, you know, your spouse is just in the military, and so you're not living together, but not your spouse, but your co-parent is somebody you still have feelings for, but you're just not living together. And this, the ones I've had were just casual relations. And so the parents didn't even necessarily really like each other too much. They didn't have much of a relationship at any point in time. And the pregnancy was either, you know, completely unplanned by both parties, or certainly not planned by one of the parties. And so There's sometimes some animosity, or, you know, there's a lot of emotions surrounding that. And you have this, you know, beautiful child that's been brought into the world, and two people who, you know, really didn't expect to ever have to deal with this other person ever again, when they thought that they had parted ways, and now they've got a child and all kinds of issues to work out in terms of parenting and the financial obligation. So I found that sometimes these situations, the emotions run high, and because of that, they can be more difficult sometimes to get parties on the same page with respect to parenting.
And you're 100% right about the role of emotions in this, because the shorter the relationship, the more likelihood is that the people are not tightly bonded. They don't have a long history together. And as a result of the roots being so shallow in the ground, the ability for these two people to problem solve on something that is mammoth, like the role of these two people in the child's life and the need of the child for both the parents, is not as obvious as it might be for families where they've been discussing the wish to have children for many, many years and have been planning for it. And in some cases, there could have been plans to have a child off a short relationship, and then boom, they do. And in some cases, there's no plans, or maybe one of them had plans unbeknownst to the other one. Maybe there wasn't much communication. But then, it's to your point, Leanne, the child is born, and these two people have views, preferences, and feelings about the other person and about their wish to have the other person in their life or not. And they didn't have them in their life for a very long time, and now are they going to have them in their life for the rest of their lives? And these are tough discussions and tough questions. And then along comes feelings of animosity or anger. In other words, why were they together originally? And why are they no longer together now? And now those experiences influence whether they're going to cooperate in having a partnership in the raising of a child. And so emotions are definitely an issue that we as lawyers contend with. But I can tell you this, it's generally speaking irrelevant to the judges that we go before, who are asked to determine what relationship the child would have with each parent. So telling a judge that this was a very short-term relationship where he never liked her anyway, or she never liked him to begin with, and the pregnancy was accidental, and as a result of that, the parenting schedule should be XYZ, that's not going to have any influence on the judge. At the end of the day, the judge is going to do what the judge does with all cases, including people that are married or have planned children or have many children. And the analysis is, what is in the child's best interest? And so one of the questions that the judges have historically asked is, what was the arrangement before separation? Well, in a relationship where they've never lived together, there is no history, there is no pattern, there is no recreating what the roles were beforehand, because there wasn't any role or co-parenting role beforehand. And in some cases I've seen, the mother gives birth, the father didn't even know, and then at some point in the future, the father finds out that he has a child and he wants to parent the child, but now the judge says, what was the history? And the answer is, he's never been involved in the child's life. And the child is now 18 months old, or 3 years old, or in some cases even older. And so do we hold that against the father because he wasn't even told? And we go back to the same analysis. What is in the child's best interest? And that's where judges sometimes become doctors of psychology. And they start determining, how do we reintroduce, or how do we introduce a parent into a child's life? Now, what happened about those people where the father did know? And the father said, I never wanted a child. and I want you to have an abortion. And the mother says, I'm not. And the father says, good, your choice, your child, I'm not involved. And then 3, 4, 5, 6 years later, the father has an awakening and says, holy cow, I have a child. And when I first found out I was immature, and now I'm more mature, and now I would like to parent the child. And then along comes the father and says to the mother, let me in. And the mother says, what do you mean, let me in? The child doesn't even know you exist. Introducing you to the child right now would be even more traumatic than not, because it would be highly disruptive. And what if the mother married or repartnered and has another child with a new partner, and the two children don't know that they have different fathers? What do we do? So these are not easy questions, and it always takes us back to first principles, which is what is in the child's best interest. And I wish I could tell our viewers that there's one golden answer, but there isn't. I've had cases where the father wasn't involved in the child's life for the first 10 years, and the judge makes an order for the involvement to occur on a graduated basis. And in some cases, the child is introduced to the parent, to the father, as a friend. And then over time, with support, the child is later told that the friend is actually a dad. I've had cases where the judge has said, it's too late. This child has already developed a life without the father in it. And if there's going to be a relationship, it'll have to be after the child turns 18. These are really difficult cases. They're not easy. But we thought, Leanne and I, that this was an important topic for us to discuss with our viewers.
Yes, and it's one where, in my experience, often mobility issues can be tied in, because often these parties who, you know, maybe had a very short or casual relationship, you know, I've seen a number of situations where the mother wanted to, you know, she's now a single mom, maybe dad didn't know that the baby was being born, or dad's not overly involved initially, so she wants to move back to where her parents are, which is in some other city or province, or, you know, wherever it might be. And she, you know, she wants to be able to go with the child. And then all of a sudden dad is saying, well, wait a minute, I do want to be in this child's life, and I don't want you moving out of the province or moving 200 kilometers away. And you know, those can be really challenging situations. And again, you know, like the other cases, like what Steve's been mentioning, it just comes back to first principles. What is in the best interest of the child? Is it going to be in the best interest of the child to allow mom to move out of the province or move 200 kilometers away from where dad is, you know, or is it not? And, you know, that may depend on how involved dad has been to date. Has dad been a non-figure in the child's life completely? Or has dad been involved? And so, you know, these cases are very fact specific. But the one constant, I think the one thing that we can be confident in saying is that whether you plan to have that child, whether you wanted to have that child, whether you were tricked into having that child, however that child ended up being born, you are responsible for child support. And so that is something that you know, have an obligation for, whether you're involved in the child's life or not even. You know, if you end up in court, a judge will order that you have to pay child support. So you do have a financial responsibility towards that child.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I'm sympathetic to those cases. I haven't had a case myself, but I've read them where a man finds out he's the father of a child after having been told by the mother that she was on birth control and that there was no way she can get pregnant. And she admits that she lied to him and that she wanted a baby. And she deliberately deceived him when they were having sexual relations, and she got what she wanted and he did not get what he wanted. And then subsequently he is asked to pay child support for 20 plus years, aside from the trauma of being told that you were lied to, then there's the question as to what's his role in the child's life, other than that of being a financial provider. These are tough cases. And Leanne, you're right. The judges have said this is about the child's needs. This child needs financial support, and you are the biological father, so you must pay. And these are tough cases. It challenges one's morality. It challenges one's sense of justice. But judges continue to be fixated, and I say this in the rightful way, on what the child needs, not what the parents need. What I wanted to also share with you all is, under Ontario law, there's issues with respect to determining paternity. Not in every case do parents say, yes, that's my child. In some cases, there's a sheer question of paternity, and it's not uncommon with the unmarrieds and the non-living together for someone to say, before I have to even make the decision as to what my role will be in the child's life, I want to know that I'm the father. Mothers don't ever have that question. They always know they're the mother. But the fathers sometimes aren't absolutely certain. And so I wanted to share with you that in Ontario, we've had many cases where the very first step is a application to court for an order for paternity testing to ascertain paternity. And I've had cases where it's come back to prove that that person who was alleged to be the father is not the father. And in fact, I had one years ago, and I remember this, that the mother was on welfare. And as a result of her being on welfare, the welfare department was paying her extra money because she had a child. And as it was then, the proper procedure in a situation like that was for the mother to make an application which was prepared by the welfare workers for child support from the father. So they asked her, who's the father? She identified the father. I got hired by the father. The father said, I don't believe I'm the father. I did have sexual relations with her, but the timing is wrong. So we got an order for blood testing, for DNA testing. Turns out he wasn't the father. Now, he paid me, and he paid his share of the paternity testing, which was split 50-50. So we went back to court, and we asked the judge for a refund, at least a refund of the paternity testing. Well, the mother said, I didn't pay for it. Social assistance paid for it. And he said, well, it's not my fault. And the judge ordered social services to repay my client for his share of the paternity test because he was wrongly identified as the father. Interesting cases.
Yeah, interesting.
Under Ontario law, I'm going to read this to you, so I'm going to look a little bit away from the screen, but under Ontario law, there are some legal presumptions of paternity, and I'll give you one of them. A father is presumed to be the father of the child if he was married to the mother at the time of the birth. If he was married to the mother, but that marriage terminated within 300 days of the birth of the child. He was married to the mother of the child after the birth of the child, but he acknowledges to be the father. If he was living with the mother of the child within 300 days, excuse me, of the child's birth. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
300
I
days.
wonder where the 300, why 300, why
Random
that's the magic number.
numbers, 10 months, roughly,
Yeah.
right? If he is listed by the mother on the birth certificate. And so think about where the mother lists the wrong guy. So these are very interesting questions that are found. And by the way, for those that are interested in reading this for yourself, you can go to the Children's Law Reform Act of Ontario. So Google Ontario Children's Law Reform Act, and scroll to Section 8, and it's called Presumptions of Paternity. And it's very interesting because once there is a finding of paternity, which could include an admission of paternity by the father, then you get two things that come out of that: rights and obligations. The right to have a relationship, which not everybody gets if you're not the father. Two, the liability for child support. And I need not remind people about what happens when people, for example, have children with somebody as a favor to, say, a same-sex friend who would like to have a child, and not done properly with proper contracts signed, there could potentially be estates rights and child support rights stemming from the participation in the creation of a child, which not everybody thinks about when they want to have a child with a friend of theirs because they would like to have a child, and either they do it through formal sexual relations or through insemination. And these are really high level discussions, certainly not for an IG Live episode, but the subject of the relationship of a parent, usually a father, with a child where there has not been a pre-existing or lengthy relationship with the mother are tough cases, and cases that most certainly require a strong sense of reflection on, now that it is, now that there is a child, now that I am the father, or now that I have told the father that he's the father, what are we going to do? What is my social obligation, my moral obligation, my financial obligation? And this does not only involve the parents. This involves the parents of the parents, the grandparents. They might want to know that they have a grandchild. And even though their son may not want a parent, they might want a grandparent. So these are really high level conversations that I encourage anybody that this might apply to, or if you know a friend that this might apply to engage in that conversation in order to ensure that you have the right information, not just from a lawyer, potentially from your clergy, your imam, your priest, your rabbi, from your parents, the child's grandparents, from your siblings, the child's aunts and uncles. These are high-level conversations that need to occur so that the right choice is made. And so at the end of the day, the child is the most important person that everybody focuses their energy on.
Yeah. Very well said. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of Divorce Explained. Bye for now.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.